Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got a dynamic hour for you, as we do every day here on BBS Radio. Now, I want you to have a pad of paper and a pen handy. You know that's a must-have with the Donna Sebo Show, because you're going to want to write down some information later on. However, if you have had stars in your eyes, you have wanted to know fame and fortune on stage, in movies, or in television, well, we've got a lady who is a professional agent. She is in New York, and her wonderful book is called Ask an Agent. Her name is Margaret Emery. Well, Margaret, I think you're going to tell us everything actors need to know about agents. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted, and I have to chuckle because when I first got your book, I have had so many friends who are in the entertainment industry, and I thought, oh, my goodness, they would have just killed to have this book.
Yes, it would have been very helpful. So many people have expressed that, gee, why wasn't this written 10, 20 years ago? And, in fact, I would have been one of those people myself, which is probably why I wrote it now.
Well, I think it's marvelous that you've taken the big step, because there's so much fabrication, make-believe, and illusion about the entertainment industry, and there isn't a day that goes by where you don't get so much fantasy, and there's very little of the reality that goes on behind the scenes. Now, you've been a New York talent agent for more than 15 years. You've represented actors of all different levels for theater, television, and film, and you yourself were an actress. Give us a little bit about your background, because you just didn't step out the door one day and say, well, I think I'm going to be an agent.
Right.
What happened to you? What was your journey?
Well, my journey, I'm a native New Yorker, and I grew up here in the city, and I went away to school, and then I went away to college. I went to Princeton, but I'd always wanted to be an actress since kindergarten when I was Mrs. Santa Claus. So
that's a big start.
Yeah, that was a big start. I was pretty good too. They said that they could hear me, so I had good diction. Anyway, I went to Princeton, but I wanted to be an actress, and so then I went to the Neighborhood Playhouse, which is a school here in New York, a good school. Sanford Meisner, who was a very good actor and also a teacher, started this school, and that's where I trained for 2 years. And then I went out and started to have a little career. And I basically worked in Shakespeare festivals and did some other acting jobs out of town in theater and a little work on the soaps. But, you know, it was so difficult to get work in this industry, and especially if you don't have representation. I mean, agents are really the people who can really take a career forward, because they have access to so many of the casting opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So actors can try to get work on their own, and they can certainly build their career to a certain level, but if you really want to be a professional and work and make a living, you're going to need to get an agent. And I was one of these actresses, very talented and very ambitious and a lot of energy, but not really able to get a lot of work, and I made my own work. You know, everybody says, ooh, be an entrepreneur, and that's what I did. I made some little companies, and I had a Shakespeare company, then I went around to schools, and I performed in that, and I booked that, and I was in a political satire group. So all these things, I have, you know, administrative and organizational skills, but I'm also a performer. And putting those two together, and then a friend said, gee, you know, you're so good in all these areas, why don't you be an agent? And I said, why would I want to be an agent? I never had one.
Mm-hmm.
Rather bitter. She said, oh, okay, well, how about a casting director? So I had worked with some casting directors. I certainly had been cast by casting directors, and I knew what they did. And, you know, I investigated that area, and one thing led to another, and my actual first job was an assistant in an agent's office. And that's really the only way that you can learn how to be an agent. I mean, there's no school for agents. You really learn on the job, and you learn working inside of an agency. And it was perfect for me, because, really, I had no idea what an agent did. So I worked as an assistant, in a small agency, and that's kind of how I learned the business, and I found I loved it. I mean, I really like going to work every day. I like having a steady job, and I like being productive and effective, and I know what it is to be an actor, and I know the material, and I know how to work with actors, because having been one, I have an understanding of their position, and I like the business end of it, you know. So it's really, it's a very good place for me, and I enjoy, you know, discovering new talent and building careers, and that's where the agency that I've worked at for 15 years, that's what we specialize in. We represent actors for theater, TV, and film here in New York, but they work all over the world. We have people who are on national tours, do movies, they're on the soaps, they do Broadway, off-Broadway, regional theater, and it really, it's very, you know, it's so exciting. If you love actors and you love the work that they do, it's wonderfully rewarding to build careers, you know, and to be to be in touch with that. And myself, having been on one side, the actor side, and now being on the agent side, I know how the business works. I know how things get done, and I know the reasons why they are done in certain ways, and not all actors know that. I mean, when you're on the other side looking in, things aren't explained. There's no reason for them to be explained. They just are. And I found that very frustrating, because if you don't know, it doesn't make sense. But now that I'm on my side, I understand why things work the way they do, and that's kind of why I wrote the book, because I thought the information, certainly as an agent, any information that I can give to actors to help them have a more effective relationship with their agents, the better the business will be.
Absolutely. Now, you make some very, very good comments in your book that I really, really appreciate. And one is that there's no such thing as an overnight success, and I just totally agree with that. And then you make a statement, we all know that talent alone won't guarantee a successful career. Sometimes, in fact, talent doesn't even factor into the equation. Talent is indefinable, and the business is subjective. One agent's discovery is another agent's path. And I think that that is so true. I have known so many people who have been exceptionally talented. I think of one gentleman in particular. He had an opportunity to be with Lawrence Welk. Now, he didn't have an agent, but he was told he needed a gimmick of some kind, because he had a magnificent, yeah, you use the word hook, he was told a gimmick. And he said, you need something that's going to make you stand out. Your voice is spectacular, but spectacular voices are a dime a dozen. And he lost an opportunity because he didn't have anybody around to tell him, let's come up with something that's going to be good, that's going to make an impression.
That's right.
And he was just totally lost. I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
How the blue blazes does somebody find an agent?
Well, you know, there are a number of ways to do it. And there are two parts of the industry. You know, there's the commercial world, and then there's the legit world. The commercial world is all those on-camera commercials and voiceovers. And the legit world is the theater, TV, and film, like the episodics and the Broadway. That's kind of the area that I'm most familiar with. Now, for commercials, those are the things you see on TV. Mm-hmm. That's all type. Type, image, gender. So an actor could send their photo and resume into an agent's office, an agent that deals specifically with commercials, and if you happen to be the type that they're looking for, they might call you in and interview you and send you out. I mean, it's like a numbers game, dialing for dollars. You just send people out and get them auditions and hope that they book. You know, I think an actor has to go out for like 100 auditions before they book a commercial. So it's really, that's that kind of business. For what the things that I do, it's so competitive and so selective that I have to be able to see someone's work before I make my decision on working on representing them. So I tell people, when you need to try, and this is great for folks who are in New York, because there's so much theater being done off-Broadway, off-Broadway, but a legit agent will usually stipulate that they need to see a person's work before they can even interview them or investigate the possibility of representing them. I mean, I would be a terrible agent, not worth my word, if I represented someone before seeing their work. I need to, first of all, I need to see the work to decide whether I think that they're number one, talented, number two, trained, and number three, whether I feel I can provide them opportunities for booking. I mean, if I don't think that I can get auditions for someone or that they can actually book the jobs that I send them out on, then this is not a working relationship. I mean, it is a business after all, right?
Absolutely.
So I need to see someone's work in a play here in New York. That's the best way to get an agent if you're looking for me. And so I urge people to get involved with showcases, plays, and New York is great because there's so much activity. I mean, in Los Angeles, there's very little of that kind of activity, so your chances of hooking up with an agent are very, very few and far between, you know?
Now, I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
When someone would submit their resume, their credits, whatever they've got, whatever they've done, and a picture, what about, do you check on them? Do you do a background check on these people?
Well, I mean, I will go so far. First of all, I have to see if they're in something and the resume interests me and I see that there's training and I know about where they've trained, then you know, I might make the effort to go and see them in their show.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I like what I see, I'd invite them into the office for an interview. And then, you know, that's really the judgment call. You know, you try to figure out whether they're professional, whether they'll, you know, show up to the auditions that you say, you find out a little bit about their background. I mean, it's an interview. And if they've studied with teachers that I know, or if they know casting directors, if they mention that they have relationships with casting directors, yes, I'll probably call the casting director to see what they think of this actor.
Now,
absolutely.
That's a very good point, because you're saying it's not just seeing them on the stage and seeing if they've got talent, but when they send you that resume, if they have links with teachers that you recognize, schools, various individuals that they have interacted with, then you can go to them.
Absolutely, absolutely, because it's, first of all, when you're listing things in a resume, it's to your best interest to really be specific about the people, the contacts you know. It's a relationship business. The more you work, the more people you know, the more people you know, the more possibility you have for getting work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it really is a 6 degrees of separation. If so-and-so says, oh, yes, I taught that actor, or, oh, I worked with that actor in this play. He was great. You should definitely meet. Most of the clients that I have are actually referrals from clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've worked with or they're actors I see when I go see my clients working. You know, I go and see my client in a play. There's another actor in the play that I think is extraordinary. I ask my client, you know, do you know what their representation situation is these days, and they'll say, oh, you know, I think he might be looking for a representation because his agent retired or moved or whatever, and then that's how that connection is made. It's through the work. It's
now,
through the work and the contacts.
For those of you that have just tuned in to the show, my guest today is Margaret Emery. Her wonderful book is Ask an Agent Everything. If you are desiring to be an actor, actress, if you're a young person, middle age, older, it doesn't make any difference. If showbiz is your passion and you're wanting to understand about how to get an agent, what it takes, this is a must-read book. I wanted to bring up a point, and you cover this in your material, about signing with multiple agencies. There was a time that was an absolute no-no. Is that still the same today? How has it changed from, let's say, the golden years of Hollywood with agents?
I think the way it is these days is that the only way that you can sign with multiple agents is for the different areas of the field, i.e. the commercial area and the legit area. You can have two separate agents in both of those areas. You have a commercial agency and a legit agency, and they can be totally separate. Also, you can sign with different agents in different locations. Like, we can handle someone in New York, and then that person can get another agent in Los Angeles. Because we do not have the agency where I work. That's what I mean when I say we. We do not have an L.A. office. So our clients, if they go out and they reside in Los Angeles and work there, they need to get themselves a Los Angeles agent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another multiple.
Well,
but as far as within the same sector of mm-hmm. business, like legit in New York, you would sign with one agent. That is your exclusive representation for that area. That's what it means to sign papers.
With what you do, and you're working at this just about every day,
mm-hmm.
there is, as you said, a great deal of social interaction because it is a people's business. How do you take care of offers, negotiate contracts? Let's get into the money side of this, because everybody has to make a living.
Sure.
And the actors and actresses, I was reviewing something today, a very well-known actress, her son was upset with her because she was taking a role that wasn't what he considered up to her quality. She said, understand, I work when there's work.
Right,
and
right.
There are dry moments, and there are moments when things are hot and heavy, and you take it when you can get it. So if
sure.
I have to play the local hot dog, that's what I'll do, or I can play in Shakespeare. It doesn't make any difference. Now, this is something a lot of people don't understand. How do you insulate or work with negotiating contracts for your clients?
Well, everyone is an individual, and every situation is an individual situation. And also, it depends on where the client is in their personal life. Some people, they need to take the money job because they need bills, they need to pay their bills. Some people can afford to take the high prestige job, the workshop with famous people in New York that doesn't pay very much, but it will move a career along. So these are factors that an agent takes into consideration, and there's a great deal of talk between the agent and the client in coming up to an understanding of what's good for the career and what's affordable, and obviously we're always trying to get the most money as possible, but sometimes, you know, there's a limit.
I understand.
You know, so you really have to take each individual case
mm-hmm.
on a case-by-case basis. And then, of course, people are in different levels of their career. I mean, for every young actor that comes my way, someone who's just out of conservatory and they don't have much experience, they need to take any work because
mm-hmm.
they need to get experience.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to go out and do a production of The Lion in Winter at the Northern Stage for $300 a week. And I don't want to hear any complaints about the salary. First of all, I'm not making any money off of it. This is a pure investment on my part
mm-hmm.
to get the actor, to make him into a better actor so that he can get to Broadway faster and we can actually make some money, you know. If it's someone who's been around forever and has been working in the business for 30 years, I'm not going to let them take a scale job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to even suggest them for a two-line role. That's terrible. So when the casting director says, oh, where is so-and-so these days, I say he's available, and they say, well, would he come in for this role? And I look at it, and it's much too small. I have to say no.
So you really do a great deal of screening.
Yes, absolutely. We have to make sure we know who the person is going to be auditioning for. You know, with our established clients, they're not going to go in for an audition, a pre-screen with a casting director. No, these are people that go right away to director.
What kind of a commission do agents get?
10%.
And how is it that you get paid? How is that arranged?
Different agencies have different ways of doing it. Some people they have a base salary, and then they also have commission. Our agency pays salaries, so
mm-hmm.
it's like all the commissions go to the agency, and the agency pays the agents a salary, and then we get a bonus at the end of the year. It really is great because it promotes teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have the agents fighting amongst each other or trying to get the actor to take their job over the other agent's job. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's really good for the. It's much better for the clients.
Now, do you have a website?
We don't.
You don't have a website.
We do not. We are available by phone, and we don't do too much of the. I mean, obviously we do email, and we everything is so electronic these days. But the agency does not have a website, and I don't.
And you don't, but I do know that.
I haven't. I have to have an actor that I represent. I have to get one of these people to create one for me.
Uh-huh. There you go. Now, if someone wanted to be in touch with you, what is your contact information?
They can drop me a line at the agency.
And your agency's name?
Is Dulcina, D-U-L-C-I-N-A, Eisen, E-I-S-E-N, Associates.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 154 East 61st Street. New York, New York, 10021.
For those of you who are listening, I told you you were going to need a pad of paper. Dulcina Eisen, excuse me, Associates, and that's D-U-L-C-I-N-A. I beg your pardon, my error. D-U-L-C-I-N-A, Eisen, E-I-S-E-N, Associates, address 154 East 61st Street, New York, New York, 10021. Now, I notice in your book you have also an email, askanagent@yahoo.com. Is
yes.
That still works?
Absolutely.
All right.
They can drop me an email.
@yahoo.com. And let's see. Oh, what's your phone number?
The phone number here, you know, I'm leery about letting it out.
Oh, okay.
Because
anyway, they've got the address in your email, so they can contact you.
That's right.
askanagent@yahoo.com. And, Margaret, you obviously have such a passion for this business.
I do.
I would like to know, where do you see the acting environment shifting into? We have all of this new technology. Television movies have become a big thing. You hear the talk about, gee, we're not going to need actors as much as we did before. And I'm thinking, you seem to be using a heck of a lot more than what you did before. How do you see the industry changing, and how is it going to affect you and what you do?
Well, you know, I'm a little bit in denial because I certainly don't want it to get more and more electronic, and I don't want the human beings to be sacrificed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here in New York as opposed to Los Angeles because I love working with theater trained actors, and I love working in the business through the theater. So I'm not paying too much attention to the electronic explosion. Even though I think it's probably great, I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing. I think if the business is changing, it's allowing for, you know, more of a global representation as far as types and storylines, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and a real multi-ethnic layered panoply, which is great. You know, that's what it's much more lifelike, and interesting projects being done all the time. So in that respect, I think it's healthy, and I think it's great. And I just hope that there's more and more writing being done, so that there's more and more opportunity for actors to perform.
Now, with young kids that are coming up through school, that have an opportunity to be in theater, to do the community theaters. That's such a fabulous environment for young people to come up through.
Sure.
And I think it's so good for their self-esteem. What suggestions would you give to someone that's coming up through the ranks, they're going to have to learn a lot of things, discovering their own individuality and yet developing skills as maybe character actors or actresses? What would you want to say to a young person that would have an interest in that?
Oh, I would say study and train and get experience. The more experience you can get being in plays, the more training you can get taking classes, the better you can really develop your instrument and learn this craft. And the more you do that, the more you'll be in a writer place for exposure in the industry.
Here in the Pacific Northwest, Seattle is very, very strong with theater.
Oh, but yes. I mean, the Intimon just won the Tony.
Mm-hmm. So it's
great.
Just absolutely a theater-loving environment. But nothing not like New York. Why do you think New York?
Well, it's just New York. New York is a special place unto its own, you know. I mean,
it is.
It really, there's nothing like it. So you can't compare anything to New York. But Seattle's great. I mean, Seattle has a real theater-oriented community. Lots of theaters, non-equity, equity, really good work, passionate people passionate about the work. So there's, you know, it's lively, and that's just great. So someone can really create a nice foundation in a place like Seattle, just like they can do in Chicago or Philadelphia. I mean, these are areas where there's lots of opportunity to really grow as an artist.
Well, show business is never going to go away.
That's right.
It's always been there, I think. The first clown that was ever developed, and there's been the actresses and the actors throughout history that have made their special mark. And, Margaret, you obviously love what you do. Margaret Emery has been my guest.
Oh, it's been a great time.
Thank you, Margaret. Her wonderful book is Ask an Agent, Everything Actors Need to Know About Agents. And by the way, I forgot. I was so engrossed in talking with her, I forgot to say we have 3 books to give away.
Ooh.
So if you know of anyone that would really like to know more about show business, hey, we've got 3 to give away today. So give us a call here at the station, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Margaret, we're almost out of time. We've got about a minute left. What would you like to give as words of wisdom to those aspiring people that want to be a star?
Okay, sure. I think in all reality, you are a star to begin with. So I think the best way to approach this business is realistically. And I think there's enough illusion in the actual work that you have to look at it as a discipline. And hopefully one would have talent, but that talent needs to be trained. And then you need to go out and seek the work and meet the people. And you certainly, I guess my word of wisdom would be to try not to take things personally.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very hard thing because so much of the person is invested in the work. You know,
yeah.
That's the most difficult part, you know, where you spend hours preparing for your audition for the Three Sisters and you mine the depths and then you go in and you expose your heart and then you don't get a call back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult. The rejection, facing rejection every day is, you know, I don't know how people can really create the armor that they need to withstand that. But I guess people do because they keep coming back and then they book the job and then they do the work and it's great. And hopefully you'll book more work than you will be rejected. But I always say getting training and getting experience are the 2 things, the most important things.
Thank you, Margaret.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
It's been wonderful having you. Again, her book, Ask an Agent. We have 3 to give away before
okay.
the hour is over. So give us a call at 877-876-5227. God bless, Margaret. Much success to you. Have a fabulous life.
Thank you so much, and the same to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Donna Sebo here. We are taking a break. Don't you go away now. We've got more good things to share. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. And telephone lines are open. If you'd like to get a free copy of the book, Ask an Agent, Everything Actors Need to Know About Agents by Margaret Emery, the lady I just finished interviewing, you're going to be able to call in to our toll-free number, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And this is a marvelous book for anyone that's wanting to make a breakthrough into the arena of show business. I know that's something that members of my family have been involved with at different times, and It's always been a challenge, and so for Margaret to take the time to put this book together, it's really a benefit. So we've got three to give away. So give us a call, or if you wanted to chat with me and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I'd be happy to do a reading for you on the air again. 877-876-5227. Well, I wanted to share some information with you about wheatgrass this afternoon, also a little bit of history, but I think what I'm going to get to, before I get into that, so many times in our world today, we are not aware that there are options for us to be able to generate an income. And sometimes we would like to be able to explore different arenas, and we just go, gee, I don't really know what I want to do, and I really am bored with my particular positioning. Well, yesterday, I happened to be with a young lady who was working at a blood unit. I donate blood whenever I can. And I was down there, and I was chatting with her, and I said, ask her the question, what in the world made you decide to become involved with the drawing of blood for the blood banks? And so she's a very young woman, and she said, well, I was working at a particular job, and I really wasn't happy with it. And a friend of mine found out about this particular program at a local community college. And so she said, I'm a single mom. I was able to go to school a couple of nights a week. And in 2 months, I was certified capable of being able to do this kind of work. And she said, I've been doing this for a couple of years, and I just love it. And I said, is there a reason why you were particularly attracted to this? She said, I love people. And I thought, how many of us would think that drawing blood for a blood bank would be a job that you'd go in for training for? You'd expect that maybe this would be done just by nurses or someone that had been in the medical profession for a period of time. But that's not the case. Well, there are so many different kinds of jobs out there in the world, and many, many times we're not aware that there's so much in the way of necessity that is needed to be taken care of. And if you take an attitude, not of, gee whiz, this is just a very menial job, to, wow, how can I take this job? What can I learn from it? And how can I put my skills to use in a bigger and better way? It's just amazing what you might discover about yourself. And I know we all have our preferences. We all know after a while what we really enjoy and what we don't enjoy. Well, I've got some information here about some women. These are four different women. And each of them ended up going into business for themselves, doing something that they in a million years had never thought they would end up doing. One lady's name is Cheryl, and she makes $100,000 a year playing with dogs. Yes, she is a pet sitter. But more than that, she said she decided she really wanted to get involved with dogs, especially because she really loved them, and she found out about a particular franchise that offers dog walking and home pet sitting and, you know, play days for dogs and this type of thing. And you wouldn't think there'd be much of a business for that, but she's going a mile a minute. And what has happened is that not only is she having a good time, but she said, I really love what I do. Now, she had to go in for training to be able to run this as a business and to operate effectively. But she decided she was going to do her homework on it first, and that's what she did. Now, there's another woman by the name of Peg, and she's in Chicago, and she is absolutely passionate about exercise. And she was in a gym class and found this one woman that offered a program called Jazzercise. She said, oh, this is for me. So she just fell in love with it. And she said, you know what? I'm just in the mood to be able to make a shift and change. I would love to do this because this would help keep me in shape, and I would have a lot of fun meeting new people and helping them to stay in shape too. Well, you know what? That's exactly what she's done. She's ended up doing something that keeps her fit, and she's making a living at the same time. Now she is in charge of and owns 6 different facilities and has 36 employees. Now, I give these two examples, but there's a woman by the name of Martha. She ended up becoming a multimillionaire with maid services. She did that. And there's another gal that is involved with other people's junk. She's making a hefty living. Now, what's so important is that each one of these individuals that I'm mentioning have a passion for what they do. They really do love it. They have fun with it. But they also have to take care of the business side of it as well. And so they have evolved building a team and also going through whatever training and learning was necessary. And no matter what you do, you're always going to have a learning curve that you're involved with. And that's been the case with each of these ladies. But whether you're a guy or a gal, if you want to do something and be successful with it, you can even make money mowing grass. I mean, it's up to you as to what you want to do. But each of these individuals that I've mentioned, again, had a passion for what they were doing. They said, this is what I love. And so they explored and they researched until they could find out exactly what they needed. Now, with each of them, they decided the franchise positioning was the one that they wanted to go into because there they knew they'd have some kind of support and they would get the training that they needed. But each and every one of us is different. So I just share these examples with you because I think so frequently in the world that we live in, it's such a fast pace. It's such an intense pace. And often we feel like we're stuck. And we'll look at somebody else and say, oh, gee whiz, aren't they lucky? Maybe and maybe not. You don't know what is going on with that individual. But if you really like what somebody's doing and you really want to know about it, follow Margaret Emery's advice. Now, she was talking about actors and actresses, but the same goes for just about any business. And it is, you want to rub elbows, or shoulders, I should say, shoulders and elbows, with those individuals that are really savvy. And you want to go in and you want to do the work because that will enable you to refine your skills, whatever they may be, really top end. And you want to be able to do it and do it very well. If you do that, you're going to be successful no matter what you do because people are going to recognize who you are. But I don't care what anybody says. It's always work. It's always effort. And it's something, though, that if you're prepared, if you're willing to walk the walk and do what's necessary, you're going to find if you don't have what you want really right now at this point in your life, you will. There's going to be something that's going to come into your space that's going to be so absolutely perfect for you, you're going to say, wow, I wonder why I didn't think of this before. But keep in mind, you're living this moment, and that's the one that counts. So make it the best you possibly can be. And that is going to be the best ever for you. Because now is what you live. You know, the future is not here yet. And what you invest in, what you put your energy and attitude in at this time lays groundwork for your future. This is Donna Siebel, and I know we're going to be taking a break in just about a minute and a half here. So I wanted to give out some information about our guests. And when we come back, I'll share some information about wheatgrass, which and a special story about that, too. But I want you to know that next week we've got a wonderful lineup of guests. We're going to be talking with Margaret McCraw. We're going to be talking about tuning in to love. Now, so many of you out there saying, I'm single, I'm tired of it. I was just talking to someone earlier today saying, oh, gee, Don, I'm so tired of being alone. I'd really like to have a companion. Well, these are going to be some good tips, I think you'll like. So she's going to be with me on Monday, and then it's moving time. Yes, lots of people are changing residences. Maybe you're even moving a business. But Kathy Kobosice, she's going to be sharing with us how we can have an easier move. Really going to be a lot of fun. On Tuesday, we'll be chatting with her. And then Ray Dodd is going to be talking with us on Wednesday about how belief systems work, what makes them work. Steve Taubman, we're going to be talking about how to unhypnotize ourselves. And then Barbara Stanley, overcoming under-earning. Dynamic group of people. Don't want you to miss any of it. And don't forget, we're archiving our shows. We're taking a break, and when we come back, we'll have the phone lines open, 877-876-5227. Don't you go away now. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Telephone lines are open, 877-876-5227. If you would like to get a free copy of Ask an Agent, then give us a call. Also, if you would like to chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Oh, I have so many different things I want to share with you, but we'll try to get to as much as we can. I wanted to talk about wheatgrass. There is so much in nature we do not understand, especially when it comes to herbs and other things. And we just constantly need to be aware of how to educate ourselves so that we can keep ourselves well, so that we can keep ourselves healthy. Now, there's a delightful lady, and she's in South Africa, so I wasn't able to get Lee Smith on the show. I'm hoping to have her sometime in the future, but Lee has put together some wonderful material on wheatgrass. And I wanted to share with you a story. This is a personal experience that my husband had. This is many, many years ago. And he was living in a community in Idaho. And there happened to be a neighbor lady of his that was just interested in all kinds of natural applications. She would, if her kids got injured, she'd use different tars and saps off of trees. They wouldn't scar. The kids wouldn't scar. They healed very, very quickly. And he happened to get into a conversation with her about things at different times. And he just said her stories that she would share about using natural components from the wild, and she had grown up that way. This is something that was just a part of her life. Her family never did go to a pharmacy. They just didn't believe in it. They said there was enough out in the natural environment to supply all of their needs. So she learned a lot of things. And well, this one incident was quite interesting. She had a lady in her 80s that found out that she was very much into herbs. And she was talking with her, and she said, well, I have contracted breast cancer, and the doctors won't touch me because of my age. And so she said, well, I've got something that might help you, but you're going to have to totally rely on me. So this lady, who had been given up by physicians, ended up seeking counsel from this woman, and she used wheatgrass. Now, my husband said he didn't know exactly how she did it, because it was so many years ago that this occurred. However, he said she used both the wheatgrass juice as well as the pulp, because the woman's chest was just a massive sore. If any of you have ever seen what cancer does to someone, it's just absolutely horrific. Well, she gave this woman wheatgrass tea, and she also would take whatever was left, and I don't know what else she did, but this is how it was remembered by my husband, and put this pack of wheatgrass all around her. As it turned out, the woman ended up being cured of cancer. Well, again, there's so much we do not know about. And I think that we're in a very fortunate period in time, because more and more professionals in the medical industry are saying we need to learn more about alternative therapies, we need to learn more about nutrition, we need to understand more about the workings of the human body and the chemistry differences between people. And I think that this is so important. It's something that I feel is going to be one of the greatest breakthroughs in this century, and that is understanding individual chemistry. But I wanted to share with you some information on wheatgrass, because it is very, very good for you. It's very nutritious, no matter what your age. It is something that it can really assist the body's stamina. If you're a vegetarian, it's great for you. A lot of vegetarians suffer from deficiencies in their B vitamins. This is excellent if you want to do it. Wheatgrass is great. Now remember, it's strong stuff. And if you want to use it, you need to be aware of what you need to do. Now you could grow your own wheatgrass in just about any health food store. You can get the kernels there. They are sprouted wheat kernels, which have been allowed to grow to the height of 6 inches or more, usually for 7 to 14 days. And you can grow it indoors or outdoors in trays or even in the open ground. Now, often it is grown by people in special sheds with controlled lighting and other desired conditions. And it can be grown hydroponically without even using soil. Now, when it reaches its optimum level of growth, you can juice it with a wheatgrass juicer or an ordinary blender. And the suggestion by Lee is, if you use a blender, liquefy the wheatgrass with some pure water, with or without raw honey, depending on how much you like it. But she said you can also chew it, you can freeze it, you can dry it, you can make it into a tincture. So there's just so much good information. By the way, her book is Wheatgrass Superfood for a New Millennium. And her name is spelled L-I, Lee Smith. And again, she's in South Africa right now, so I'm not able to talk with her one-on-one, but I know one day in the future I'll be able to do that. Now, she said, you need to remember you have to let it grow. And she said, wheatgrass is about 7 days old. It has very good nutritional value, especially when it's grown in organic soil. If you add high-quality kelp to it, it will mineralize the soil. Now, when it's grown in trays, it has a shelf life of about 2 to 3 weeks, after which time it'll start showing signs of wilting or shrinking, and you don't want it then. But there's just so many suggestions in her book about how to use it, and fresh is always the best. And then she also has a wonderful regimen for 21 days if you wanted to detox yourself and you wanted to do things. But it is so green, it is so healthy, and there's just so much that it will do for you nutritionally that I think it can make all the difference in the world, in your wellness. And I think, too, when we look at vegetables, we need to remember our colors of our vegetables. They are something we have to keep in mind, because when you eat a rainbow selection of your vegetables, then you're going to be getting a lot more of the nutrients. But in today's world, it is important we have supplements in our diet, because so much has changed. We don't have the growth patternings like we did before. So a lot of the food is picked green and then shipped out. My goodness, we feed millions and millions of people. So we have to be aware of the changes that have occurred. So you've got to take care of yourself. We want to have you around for a long time. Well, I know we're just about out of time here. This is Donna Sebo. You've got an absolutely awesome weekend that's going to be coming up. I'm so delighted you were able to spend this hour with me. And don't forget, July 1st, we're shifting our show time to 11 a.m. Pacific time. And I don't want you not to be aware of that, because I would just love to have you join me at that time. And that's on starting July 1st. The Donna Sebo Show will be on from 11 until noon. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You've got so much to be excited about. This is a good day. A good day for you. Expect the best. You deserve it, don't you? I think you do. Have a wonderful weekend. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.